Court. My name is Edward Hopkins, bar number 43298. I am counsel for the appellants. None of the defamatory statements that were alleged in the complaint were subject to an absolute privilege. Why? Because none of them were made during a quasi-judicial proceeding or an adjudicatory hearing that was held by the commission. Nor were any of them published solely to people who were involved in litigation between the parties. Because of those two facts, those are facts, they are not a legal issue. Because of those two facts, the trial court erred. The trial court held that the statement Mr. Schaefer made during a monthly meeting that everyone knows about, open to the public at large, where anyone from anywhere, for any reason, can get up and make any statement, was part of a quasi-judicial proceeding. The evidence doesn't bear this out.
Mr. Hopkins, let me ask you, it seems to me that both parties have gone considerably beyond the face of the complaint. And some of the statements that you just made, I think, are beyond the face of the complaint as well. We don't know, do we, from the complaint, when these statements were made in the meeting per se, and we don't know from the complaint, do we, whether or not there was any kind of adjudicatory process going on at the time the statements were made.
Your Honor, you're absolutely correct. And if you were to interpret that fact in a light most favorable to the appellants, I can't see as a district court judge how you could dismiss the complaint, how you could dismiss all of those defamation claims. Those were defamation per quo claims and defamation per se claims. Several statements in each of three publications were claimed to be defamatory. And each of the publications was made outside the scope of what even appeared to be a quasi-judicial proceeding.
Well, if we don't know that it's a quasi-judicial proceeding, and the only way we could know on a motion to dismiss is by looking at the complaint, does that mean that the privilege cannot apply as a matter of law, or does that just mean that the privilege doesn't apply at this stage?
Your Honor, I would agree with the second of those points, that it doesn't apply at this stage. I would concede that if the Gaming Commission, for instance, were to provide some expert testimony to the court and explain that it interpreted that public comment section of its meeting as an adjudicatory proceeding, then the court would have something to go on. It would have some teeth to sink its decision into. But with none of that, the allegations in the complaint should have steered the court away from that conclusion, far away from that conclusion. The allegations said the statements were unprivileged. If they're unprivileged, that means no absolute privilege applies. At best, a conditional or qualified privilege could apply. And if there were any privilege that applied, it would be that.
Is the statement in the complaint that says of the privilege there, that he was not privileged to make these statements, is that an assertion of fact, or is that an assertion of law?
Your Honor, I believe it's a combination of both. I believe if you were to interpret it in a light most favorable to the plaintiffs, that you would have to interpret the facts of the complaint in a light that would support the legal conclusion that it was not privileged as an absolute privilege or a qualified or conditional privilege. These would be matters that would be subject to litigation upon the development of discovery and disclosures. The trial court did not address whether it was important that public members who had nothing to do with any business dealings for the parties were present at that public meeting. It did not address that. The complaint clearly alleged that people who had no business dealings with the parties and were not involved in any type of litigation with the parties were at the meeting.
Well, in a judicial proceeding, there can be members of the public sitting out in the back, and those statements that are made by parties in judicial proceedings are still protected.
You're absolutely right, Your Honor. But in this particular case, we are arguing that this did not have the look, feel, smell, taste of a quasi-judicial proceeding. And therefore, it was not a judicial proceeding. If it was not a judicial proceeding, we wanted to turn to the next argument, which was that when you make a statement that could be related to litigation between parties, as the appellee alleged his statements were, when you make those statements to the public at large, if they have nothing to do with litigation, those statements aren't privileged anymore. The absolute privilege goes away. We get that in the Valencia case. So our core argument is that it was not a quasi-judicial proceeding or adjudicatory proceeding. We argue that, we believe, in the briefs. But what we want to make the court clear when it comes to our position is that because there's no evidence that the commission took any action as a result of Mr. Shaver's comment, there's no evidence they even planned a hearing based on it.
The problem I'm having is when you say there's evidence, because we look at this only on the basis of the complaint itself. So I understand the problem that you're having with it, but we can't look at evidence, nor should the trial court, right? We just look at the complaint.
And you can look at the absence of evidence in favor of the position that an absolute privilege could apply. There is an absence of evidence. The only evidence that the court got that the complaint could have even been of the sort that could be considered a formal complaint by the commission came in the form of the motion to dismiss. It wasn't in the pleadings.
Well, there was an allegation that you, I think, made in the complaint saying the defendant said, please take this as a formal complaint in one of the emails.
That was an email that took place after the slanderous statements were published at the public meeting on July 19th. That email you're talking about was published on August 16th. So the statements that the appellee made on July 19th had no connection at the time, and there's no evidence they had a connection since, to any type of proceeding whatsoever. No one has presented evidence to the trial court that a proceeding of any kind took place. And with the absence of that, how can the district court say that it was part of a quasi-judicial proceeding?
Was it a request by Mr. Shaver to take action?
I see.
With respect to Mr. Kinfarm?
And if we consider that point, the court would have to rule that merely asking an organization that has the right to either take action or not, has the right to either enforce the civil procedure rules or not.
Well, if a person files a complaint in a civil court that contains all kinds of defamatory statements, the fact that the court takes no action on it doesn't take away the privilege that's attached to those statements, I don't believe.
Your Honor, you're absolutely right.
And here we don't have a written complaint, but we might have an oral complaint.
You're right, Your Honor, but there's two problems with that approach. Number one, the commission has clear regulations and guidance that it sets forth for how to file a complaint. There's no evidence that they considered what Mr. Shaver did to be a complaint. So who defines what a complaint is? By merely saying, I'd like to make a formal complaint, does that in and of itself convert a statement in an email that is sent through informal channels into a complaint? It wouldn't be a complaint if that were done in our judicial system, and there's no procedural allowance for that type of process for the commission. The procedures are set forth very clearly in the code of regulations. It was not a complaint according to that code. And if we take the position that structure, a form over substance type of argument, okay, if we take that argument, we still should limit it to a qualified privilege, because until it's determined that it is indeed a complaint, until it is determined that it's a complaint, it should be treated as something that occurs before a formal complaint is made. Nobody, no adjudicatory body, determined that it was a formal complaint. The court even admitted that it lacked the sufficient information to tell what was going on at the public meeting. Yet and still, despite admitting that it lacked sufficient information to make the proper determination, it reached. It said a quasi-judicial proceeding was taking place when those slanderous statements were made. And that's where we believe the court erred. We also believe the court erred when it determined that those emails on August 16th and 21st were either a part of a judicial proceeding or started one. Because there's no evidence that a proceeding was held. There's no evidence that the commission treated those as the initiation of a proceeding. No evidence. The absence of evidence is evidence. Because the determination needs to be that there's evidence that it was a quasi-judicial proceeding. There's not. I'd like to reserve our time For rebuttal.
Thank you.
Can I please the court?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, my name is Karen Wheeler, attorney registration 16884. And with me at council table are Jamie Mall, registration 43726, and Catherine Cobb, registration 40063, all representing the appellee in this matter. Your Honor, this is a case, Your Honors, this is a case about the First Amendment. The First Amendment recognizes the rights of our citizens to petition the courts for redress for grievances. And that's precisely what Mr. Schaefer did in complaining of Mr. Kenfler to the Gaming Commission. And Your Honors, may I please get a drink of water?
Sure.
I'm struggling with and that's why I number my pages too. So it's a case about, the First Amendment. And the relief on appeal is whether the district court correctly dismissed Joseph Canfora, Merritt Cripple Creek LLC, and Merritt Management LP's defamation claims pursuant to CRCP 12b-5 for failure to state a claim. Now, procedurally, and Your Honors have already touched on this, I think it's very important to keep in mind that the complaint at issue is the complaint filed in August of 2012. A motion to dismiss that complaint was heard. That complaint was never amended, nor was an amendment of that complaint requested. Although, in response to our motion or the court's order dismissing the case, Canfora and the Merritt entities filed a motion with the court for reconsideration under Rule 59 is what they attempted to use. And in that, they requested the court take judicial notice of minute meetings and agendas that have become part of the appellate court record by designation. Those are not part of the complaint. Complaint was never amended, so it stands as is. It's filed in August. Now, the court's question on does that complaint raise any allegations of a judicial proceeding? I think it does. Implicitly, it does because it cites the Colorado Limited Gaming Act of 1991 on page 2 of that complaint. And the complaint also sets forth, we're talking about the July 19th email, where Mr. Canfora, and this is in the record, the complaint, page 5, sub D, his first approach at the commission, I would like to ask the commission to not allow Mr. Canfora's change of ownership dilution attempt to be approved when the time comes and allow the separate ownership transfer to occur related to my interest. Now the background, the factual background of this matter is that Mr. Schaefer was a part owner in a casino.
How do we know that?
We don't have to go there.
Let's not go outside.
So that's why we're talking about two interests, but specifically to the complaint, and this is in the paragraph 33D, he's asking the commission to take action, and I think that's important. Now,
do we know from the law, Ms. Wheeler, whether the commission can prevent ownership transfers or even consider ownership transfers?
Yes, Your Honor, we do.
What section of the statute deals with that?
The commission's powers and duties are set forth in Title 12, 47.1, 302. And the commission has both, if we're analyzing the quasi-judicial functions of the commission, I believe that you could properly say that they have both quasi-judicial and quasi-legislative functions by looking at this power section. However, specifically, with regard to highlight that part.
I mean, I'll tell you, I've looked at the Act and I can't find any provision that specifically talks about the Commission's power to affect ownership interests. Now, I can sure stand corrected,
And if you know of it, please let me know.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm going to have Ms. Maul look through that real quickly. I will go on to a related aspect of that. The mission of the commission, Your Honor, is to ensure honesty and integrity in the Colorado Gaming Commission. The Colorado Limited Gaming Control Commission is appointed by the Division of Gaming, a division of the Department of Revenue, and they are to act in ensuring the integrity of the system. The commission is required by law to meet at least once a month. Those are scheduled meetings, and this was one of the meetings that the commission was holding when Mr. Schaefer appeared and expressed his deep concerns with regard to the propriety of Mr. Schaefer holding a license.
Do we know from the complaint, Ms. Wheeler, that this was a special monthly meeting, regularly scheduled monthly meeting, or do we know whether this was a special meeting scheduled only for a particular purpose?
From the complaint, Your Honor, we do not know that.
So we can't assume that, can we?
Well, on paragraph 32 says that the meeting was open to all members of the general public and was held in Golden, Colorado, a public meeting.
Okay. But adjudicatory meetings are held before the public as well, are they not?
They may be. And I think that that's set forth in 207.5. Hold on, Jamie, where it says that the they can hold them in public, but they do have the power to hold them in an executive committee where they believe that things of a more private nature will be held.
Is there any indication from the complaint that this was an executive meeting?
Yes, Your Honor, there is an indication in the complaint that it was a public meeting in paragraph 32.
And no one asked, apparently based on the complaint again, to go into an executive session.
According to the complaint, no one asked to go into executive session. That would not be Mr. Schaefer's purview, however. That would be the committee's option to go into executive session. Now, it says the commission may hold executive or closed meetings, and that's a may, and that is Title 12, 47.1, Part 5, Sub 1, A through D. Your Honor, the public nature of this meeting really is to me not the issue. It is analogous, as you stated, to a proceeding where even someone goes into court for a protection order and they feel that their life is threatened and they go in pleading and saying somebody is a really bad person and is trying to do criminal acts against them. People can be sitting in the galley during those sorts of statements to the court, and even the people sitting there watching have nothing to do with the proceedings. That does not render the communication accepted from the privilege. The communication remains accepted, and there's a really important public policy reason behind that, and I know that you all know that very well, and that is to ensure that people feel free to make complaints to the government without the threat of being sued ipso facto for libel. Now, the appellant asserts that this is a matter of first impression in Colorado and attempts for the court to apply Arizona law. I think that is just absolutely flawed, as there's a long line of cases in Colorado dealing with how to determine whether a proceeding is quasi-judicial and whether the absolute privilege in that takes place, starting with the cases cited by counsel, the Cherry Hills case and the Valencia case. The Arizona case is inapplicable. The standard is a state law standard, and the Arizona state law differs from the procedures that have long been in place in Colorado. In fact, the Arizona courts have refused to apply Colorado law for those very reasons. Now, it is undisputed, and it is in the plaintiff's complaint. The CLGCC is a regulatory body. It has the power to promulgate rules and regulations governing licensing, conducting and operating of limited gaming, and to conduct hearings when complaints are made. Mr. Schaefer was in the initial stages of making that complaint. In the first email that we read into the record just a minute ago, that is part of the record, where he says, in conclusion, I want the commission to take action and disallow Mr. Campora's change of ownership. That was one of the things that he was talking about. He was also talking about a pre-litigation letter that cites case law stating clearly that, this activity is fraudulent. The commission specifically has the authority to regulate those types of things at 2447.1302.
Ms. Wheeler, do we know that any of the emails were sent to CGLCC members?
From the complaint?
Yes.
We do not.
How do we know then that this is a formal complaint being submitted to the Limited Gaming Control Commission?
Well, we know from the complaint that the words were spoken, and we know from the complaint that the complaint was made. However, we don't know, and your point there triggered in my brain, we don't know from the complaint that those things were actually published to the commission or to others from the complaint. He does say in the complaint that defendant voiced statements during the CLGCC meeting that were open to the general public. And then he authored and sent an email to the state of Colorado agents, and I do believe he means the CLGCC, but it's not clear.
It's not clear.
That's correct, Your Honor. So, the commission is tasked, it has the duties to, upon complaint or upon its own motion, to levy fines or suspend or revoke licenses when the commission, that the commission has issued, to conduct hearings upon complaints charging violations of this article or rules and regulations promulgated pursuant to this article, and to conduct other such hearings as may be required of the commission. The complaint also states that a formal complaint was made against Campora, and that Schaefer asked the CLGCC to act in a quasi-judicial capacity. The complaint doesn't say that, that's my words. I know that's an important distinction. When he requested the CLGCC not allow Canfora's change of ownership dilution attempt to be approved.
What paragraph?
That, Your Honor, is in the record 5-6, paragraph 33, record 7, paragraph 37.
It's paragraph 33 of the complaint.
It is. And then we've got the filing ID. Page 33 and page 37 of the complaint. The CLGCC decision that affects the licensing and ownership interests of Campora is a governmental decision likely to adversely affect the protected interests of specific individuals. Your Honor, I believe that the case of Meininger versus Knight is very compelling in this situation. In that case, Mr. Meininger appears to be, from the case of a member of the Genesee community, and he was upset that a bar was operating in the community, and he circulated a petition. And the petition said was sent to the Jefferson County County Commissioners requesting cancellation of the plaintiff's liquor license. The business entity sued him for libel and said that this statement that read, the petition of the homeowners in the Genesee Gulch respectfully requests the license of the Overbrook Nightclub in Genesee Gulch be canceled. This is purely a residential community and we would like to keep it that way. Overbrook Nightclub is a hideout for people who want to drink and carry on in a manner objectionable to the established morals of the community. This was signed by just general people in the neighborhood. It was published to the general people in the neighborhood, and the court held that the petition as presented had a qualifier conditional privilege. We believe this communication to fall within the class, including acts of state, as the privilege here prevailing is one for the promotion of public welfare, shows on its face that it's for the well-being of society in which the defendant had a direct interest, and his good faith in presenting the petition is not seriously questioned. Your Honors, I believe that that case is analogous to this situation where Mr. Schaefer is going in to express serious concerns about the morality, the conduct of someone involved in the same industry, and should be afforded the absolute protection, as this was all done within the quasi-judicial arena. We believe that the trial court was accurate in dismissing this case, and we believe the trial court's order should be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Your Honor, the appellate rests.
Very well. Case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course. Thank you for your arguments this afternoon.